You're listening to Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. Our guest is Professor Martin Llewellyn, first author of an intriguing analysis in the BMJ late last month. It's titled, "The Antibiotic Course Has Had Its Day," clearly says what the analysis concludes. Rather than admonishing patients to complete the course of an antibiotic, in some cases, it may be better from the standpoint of antibiotic stewardship to advise stopping treatment when the patient feels better. We'll talk about it. Professor Llewellyn is in the Department of Global Health and Infection at Brighton and Sussex Medical School and also at Brighton and Sussex University Hospitals in the UK. Welcome to Clinical Conversations, Professor Llewellyn.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for having me, Joe.
Well, I for one can say that in the past, I've advised friends who ask to keep taking their antibiotics. And not that I'm a clinician, but they ask because of where I work at the New England Journal of Medicine group. And so talk a bit about why you've questioned the dogma that I've been spreading among my friends.
Sure. So I suppose the first thing to say is that I'm an ID physician in the UK National Health Service. And in my daily practice, one of the dominant issues that I face is with antimicrobial resistance and with antimicrobial overuse, and how we should reduce that overuse, because by doing so, obviously, we hope to reduce resistance. And an issue which has kept emerging in these efforts has been this deeply held belief you refer to, that if you fail to complete a course of antibiotics, this will increase risk of resistance. And this is a really long-standing idea. And in the article, one of the things we do is to try and get our heads into where this idea comes from. And it seems to go right back to the dawn of the antibiotic era. But it cuts against a lot of the things that we really know now about antibiotic resistance, which is basically the more antibiotics that you use or take, the greater selection for antibiotic resistance that you see. And so we thought this was time to try and challenge this idea, try and understand where it comes from, and try and remove it from getting in the way, as we see it, of efforts to use antibiotics more wisely.
Okay. And as I understand it, the threat of antibiotic resistance comes not so much from the targeted organisms as it does from the other organisms that are hanging around elsewhere on or in us, that are liable to pick up resistance factors from other species. Have I understood that correctly?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So the idea that bacteria can become resistant to antibiotics is obviously very old, and it's certainly true that the bacteria that we target for treatment when a patient is given antibiotics can, under some circumstances, develop mutational resistance. You can have naturally occurring mutants which produce resistant subpopulations, and this can allow resistance to emerge on treatment. And these tend to be what you might term the professional pathogens, organisms which can be transmitted from one person to another during disease or during treatment, and where the aim of treatment is eradication of that organism from the individual person. And this is a problem which was understood early in the antibiotic era, and I think the TB trials, which were obviously a lot of the early antibiotic trials, reinforced this. And the issue with mutational resistance like that really is more adequate dosing and use of combination therapy, as we see. But the vast majority of infections that make up my daily practice, and I guess the same is true for physicians in the US, are what you might term commensals gone wrong. So these are organisms which ordinarily live in us or on us or in our environment. And every time we take an antibiotic, for any reason, the vast majority of that antibiotic actually goes to expose the environmental organisms, not to the target organism. Uh-huh. These are the Enterobacteriaceae in the gut, things like Enterococci and Staphylococci, which go on to cause infections later on and are the common causes of most of the infections that we confront in practice today.
You and your colleagues write that patients, and I'm quoting, patients might be best advised to stop treatment when they feel better. end quote. But you warn that that the advice should not be followed out the window. And if you give us an example, otitis media. Are there other warnings that you would like to give about the idea that you have?
Yeah, so I think that's something which has been slightly lost in analyses of the article. We are taking issue with the message that failure to complete a course causes resistance. Both CDC in the US and Public Health England in the UK have changed their messaging to talk about following doctor's advice exactly, or similar words to that. Mm-hmm. And of course, it depends what that advice might actually be from the doctor. We are not suggesting, as a widespread practice, that patients should stop taking antibiotics when they feel better. The reason we highlighted that message in the paper is it is a specific thing which authorities such as the WHO have previously said you shouldn't do. And yet, for example, there was a nice trial published a couple of years ago in community-acquired pneumonia, which tested exactly that hypothesis and found that if you stop antibiotics when patients are better, in that study after around 5 days, the outcomes are just as good as if you continue antibiotics to 10 days. So there are other approaches you can use to reduce antibiotic durations, and these involve challenging mantras which say that unless you complete an established course, you get resistance.
Okay. Now, is it fair to say that the problem you're about solving is that it lies in the lack of research on the best duration of antibiotic treatment, and that it has been based mostly on tradition and expert opinion? And if so, what research is now underway to address that?
Sure. So, you know, I think that if you look at it really simplistically, there are really only two ways to overuse antibiotics less. The first is not to start antibiotics in patients who don't need them. And there has been some success, particularly in primary care, around achieving that, so not prescribing antibiotics for viral sore throats and infections and so on. But the other way of doing it is to stop antibiotics earlier, more often, in patients in whom they've already been started. And so we've had tremendous initiatives such as the Longitude Prize, which is something which is, I hope listeners will be familiar with, which looks at developing diagnostics for infectious diseases to address the AMR challenge. And that's particularly around knowing, does my patient need to start antibiotics or not? Yeah. What we really need is some research which tells us, has my patient had enough antibiotics now? That may depend on the organism, it may depend on the syndrome, it may depend on the patient, but we need to start developing ways other than just using the seat of our pants, which we've done historically, to know to stop treatment.
How have the BMJ's readers and your colleagues reacted to the analysis? There was an article in the Wall Street Journal that quotes the World Health Organization as more or less agreeing with your analysis, but I'm interested in what your colleagues are saying to you.
Yeah, I think that there has been widespread agreement within people who spend time thinking about this that what we're saying is true. And, you know, after all, I should point out that we're not by any means the first people to say this. I mean, there was an article that we cite in the paper published in The Lancet back in the late 1990s. Mm-hmm. I think it was called something like Don't Keep Taking the Tablets. Yeah. And the arguments we present are not necessarily new. I think they've just resonated very loudly now because of the huge profession and public concern about antimicrobial resistance. I think that any negative responses we've had to the article have really been around the coverage in the lay media and interpreting what's been said as an invitation for people to do what they want with their antibiotic prescriptions. Yeah. And that's clearly not what we're saying. We're saying, I try and make it clear at the end of the article, that we want patients and doctors, or prescribers, I should say, when they're having a conversation about whether antibiotic treatment is indicated or not, to also have a conversation about when that treatment should stop. And that conversation should be around the individual patient rather than what we do now, which is treating a particular syndrome with a particular duration of antibiotics, and shouldn't be confused by this spurious idea that if you did stop a bit early, that might cause resistance.
Mm. Well, the curbside advice that I'm going to be giving my friends is to talk to their clinicians.
Absolutely.
I should have been giving that all along anyway, but I want to remind our listeners that there's going to be an NEJM group open forum on this topic starting next week, next Wednesday, the 23rd of August. And I'll give a link on this site to that forum. But if they're just listeners only, they should just Google NEJM, all one word, and then group open forum, and then you'll get clearer directions about how to get there. I want to thank you very much, Professor Llewellyn, for spending time with us today.
Thank you very much.
That was our 211th edition. All earlier conversations may be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from Journal Watch. Kristen Kelly is the executive producer here for the NEJM Group. I'm Joe Elia. Thank you for listening.